Raise your hand if today's parable from Jesus is your favorite of Jesus' parables. Anybody? No? No? This is nobody's favorite parable. I would be, if you raise your hand, I knew you were just being clever. I half expected Larry to do it, but he knows better. This is nobody's favorite parable. One of the study Bibles in the comments, it said, I don't remember, I didn't write down the exact quote, but it basically said, there is no satisfactory explanation for this parable. There's no explanation that, like, makes sense of this all the way through. Everything that Jesus says, everything that the point is. Making sense of this parable of Jesus necessarily requires speculation. We kind of have to make some assumptions or make some guesses about what else was going on in the lives of these characters in order to make sense of this. Generally, Jesus commending dishonest people and shrewdness and wealth and all that, it's confusing. Even in the thing itself, it's not like Jesus is telling a whole story that we can make sense of that we just don't agree with. It's that it doesn't make sense. So, get excited for that. We're going to talk about that. In good news, the people who put together the lectionary kept, after this parable, kept along with it a more famous and less ambiguous expression of Jesus when he says, talks about the two masters, and he says, you cannot serve God and wealth. That part, relatively straightforward. We think we know what's going on there. And so they have that, and if we use that to help understand the rest of the parable, then we have, that's the first piece of speculation we'll make, and then we'll try to do that so that it makes at least a little bit of sense for us here today. So, you cannot serve God and wealth. We'll start with that. Jesus talked a lot about money. Some people like to talk about money. Some people don't like to talk about money. I like to talk about money. And not as much as Jesus did, of course, but we're going to talk about money today in our sermon, so get excited. One of my favorites. You cannot serve God and wealth. This is about where we place our trust, right? You place your trust in God or in wealth. I've talked about this. Some of you have heard me talk about this more than once already in my brief time here, that money is one of the most common idols that we face in our society, one of the most common competitions to God. We put our faith in our money and in ourselves and in our ability to earn money, and in we trust in the security that money gives us rather than trusting in God. And when we have the choice between taking care of or trusting in God or trusting in money, most of us at the end of the day are going to trust money, because we can put it in our hands, we can see what it does for us directly. We think we know enough to do the right things with it, to keep us healthy and safe, take care of our families. And so we choose money over God. We all do it just about every day. That's, our society is built on that. Our capitalist structure, that's how it works. You got to take care of your money, because nobody else is going to take care of you. That's what capitalism means. And you get the most money, and then you win. That's how the game works, right? There's very little place for God in the whole structure of the way our society is built. And so money becomes an idol. It becomes the thing that we wind up worshiping and giving our devotion to instead of God. And obviously that happened in Jesus' day, and that's what he's talking about here. I'll talk a little, to make it a little more explicit even about this money as an idol in our society. You know, some of the great sacred myths of this country, right? The sacred myth of the self-made man. You've heard of this guy, right? He probably pulled himself up by his bootstraps, which is a disgusting phrase, in my opinion. He earned all his money. He, came from nothing, and he did all this himself, and it's all his now, and he's the king of the world. It's always a him, by the way. I don't know what that's about. Actually, I do know what that's about. See, we as Americans, we teach these myths to our children more than we teach the parables of Jesus. That's part of the way that we make sure that money is more important than God in our society and in our lives, even though we try to do otherwise. What we know, and we do know, and we read it in the scriptures, is that money is a false god. Money is not God. Everybody knows that, but we act as if it is. That's the thing. We know better, but we do it anyway. That's kind of how sin works. We know, if we really think about it, that the self-made man, right, he only makes himself, that's the usual way that happens is you make yourself by exploiting others, by taking advantage of systems and structures that allow you to do that. And what's interesting is in our society, the systems and institutions and structures have been built to benefit some people more than others. I think that's really why it's the self-made man and not the self-made woman, is because the structures are to benefit men. Men could own stuff, men could vote first, blah, blah, blah. It's a patriarchal, male-dominated society. And that's built in structurally, and that's why it's the self-made man and not the self-made woman in our myth. Also, of course, we've got the parts about how the systems that are exist in our society, I'm not going to get into all the details, but there are clear, obvious historical reasons why white Americans tend to have much more wealth gathered and generated than do, say, black Americans or American Indian folks. There are long-time historical structural reasons that that exists. Most of the people in this room identify as white, I think. Most of us have more money than the average person who doesn't look like us in this country, and that's because of a long series of historical things. It's not because we're smarter or harder working or anything like that. It's just how the chips have fallen because this structure puts us in that place. And so the question as we think about what we have and what we're going to do with what we have and how we're going to follow Jesus together is, the question is, what are we going to do if we know what we have, we know how it compares to other people, and we know what God has done for us, we know what Jesus says about money, so what are we going to do? How are we going to live in relation to money? How are we going to try to stop money from being a god to us, from acting as a god to us? I'm going to dive back into our parable for a minute, and then I'll probably come back to that. So, the best explanation, and by best I mean easiest to understand explanation, that we came up with this week in Bible study, and thank you for those who were there this week trying to help make sense of this parable, is that what if the manager in today's story was charging a commission on top of what they owed the owner? And this is plausible. I read this in one of the books. This might be how it was. So when it says, take 100 and make it 50, take 100 and make it 80, he was cutting off his own sort of personal commission. He was cutting off the skimming off the top that he was doing, so that the owner was still getting what he was supposed to get, and so that the debtor, the person who owed, was now saving a bunch based on the original bill. It's, a shrewd, as it says in here, way to manage the money and manage the relationships. So maybe he'll even get to keep his job because the owner still gets the money. Or maybe he'll make friends with other people and they'll take him into their homes like he says here. That's the hope. Or maybe both of those things will happen. It's the best he can do at the time. Jesus says, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth. And if we're choosing to take that as serious, like how to follow Jesus' advice, which is, that's speculation for sure. We can think about this and we can say, how does this manager make friends for himself by means of dishonest wealth? Well, he gives it away. He gives it back. He decides to stop taking the dishonest wealth and uses that. I mean, it was never his in the first place, but he uses it to give, to make friends, like it says, so that people will like him, so that people will favor him. He chooses in that moment to value people and relationships over money. He chooses to value people and relationships over money. And that sounds a little bit to me like choosing God over money, like trusting in God over money. And people aren't God, and I think the analogy is a little bit fuzzy, to be honest. But this is not an easy parable, so we do the best we can with what we got. And like I said, we're making some speculation here. Now, when we talk about stewardship, we're talking about how we can faithfully manage the gift that God has given us. And we're going to be talking about stewardship now, so get excited. Jesus is talking about money, we're talking about stewardship. More next week. Woo! Don't think we're over this for once in the year. So money is one of the gifts that God has given us. Money is one of the things that we have. All that we have comes from God. That's kind of a baseline Christian assumption. All that God is the creator of everything, God loves us, all that we have and all that we are comes from God. We find our identity in Jesus and in the love of God that we know through Jesus. These are some of the core Christian things. And therefore, we can say that even the money we have, whatever job, whatever, however we earned it, however we got it, all of this comes from God. So what are we going to do with what we have in order to be faithful to God, in order to follow Jesus with what we have? I can't help but think of the story of Robin Hood. You know the Robin Hood? It's like an English sort of legendy thing. Y'all heard about Robin Hood, right? Now, I'm of the age, and maybe some of you are the same, but maybe not, where when I think of Robin Hood, I obviously think of the Disney animated 70s Robin Hood, where he was a fox. There's all the animals running around. Maybe some of you saw that. You too, Micah? Excellent. It's obviously the best adaptation of Robin Hood in the history of everything. I told you the story about my childhood. I'm glad that factored into the story. Maybe not, indeed. But anyway, the thing about this, about Robin Hood, right, is that Robin Hood steals from the rich and gives to the poor. That's the shtick, right? That's the hook. And Robin Hood is the hero of the story. Like, stealing is bad, right? We agree that stealing is bad. That's in the Bible, too, right? Like, you know, don't steal stuff. Duh. You don't get to be the good guy when you steal stuff. And yet, because of what Robin Hood does with what he does, he gives it away. He gives it away to the people in need. And again, that's also very well done in the animated 1973 Disney version. But, so somehow, in this story, and in our, like, consciousness of this story, he becomes the hero, not because of how he got what he had, but because of what he does with what he had. And I think that that's curiously similar to what Jesus is saying today in the parable. It's less about how you got it, and it's more about what you do with it when you've got it. Because at some point, you realize, this is my life, this is where I am. I can't go back and change what happened before. There's no reason to feel guilty about it or worry about it. But I can make good, faithful choices about what I'm going to do now. That's all we can do. We can make good, faithful choices about what we're going to do now. Can't worry about the past. It's not going to help anyway. And so, we could follow Robin Hood's example or the example of the so-called dishonest manager here, and give away what we have. I mean, that is the right thing to do with money. That is the way to keep money from being an idol, from being a god to us, is to give it away. My former bishop talked a lot about this, and it's my favorite thing that he did. He would say, money is powerful, and money has power over you. Money has power over us. That's how our society is built. And the way to remove that power is to give money away. Just give it away. Don't spend it. Don't buy stuff with it. Give it away. Give it away to people who need it. Give it away to the church that you believe in because you believe the church is doing God's work, or other organizations that you believe are doing good. Because the thing is, I give to the church because I believe the church can do more good with my money than I can. Because I believe that God is guiding the actions of the church. However misguided, every congregation's a mess, the whole church is a mess. Yes, all of that is true. And still, I have this faith, all I can call it is faith, that the church is going to do better with my money than I am. Because if I just sit and do with my money, I'm going to buy a vacuum cleaner and a washer and dryer. And that was just yesterday, all right? Like, whoever said homeownership was a good idea, I'd like to have a word with them. But I believe that more good can be done for more people with my money if I give it away than if I keep it for myself, than if I hoard it for myself. And so to be generous with our money, to make friends, as it says, even no matter how we got our wealth, to make friends so that others can care for us, to trust in people and relationships rather than trusting in money and ourselves, that's a worthwhile lesson that Jesus may be trying to teach us here today. Jesus, of course, has given everything for us. Jesus has given everything for us. Jesus lived and died and rose again so that we could know God's love for us, so that we could see what it looks like to live for others and not for ourselves. Jesus has given us an example. He taught all these lessons, even if they were confusing, like today's parable. Jesus did everything he could so that we would have a chance, have a clue about how to follow him and how to live in right relationship with God and right relationship with others. to love and serve God and our neighbor. And because we know the story of Jesus, because we know the stories of Jesus, we can make these choices. We can try yet again to put our trust in God and not in money, to give and be generous, and trust that God can do more than we can on our own. Amen.